Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. He's speaking to us from South Florida. Welcome back to the show, Rick.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for inviting me on. Always a pleasure.
Rick, what's going on with gold?
It's finally happening. You know, what we've been waiting for since maybe 2011 is looks to be underway. I don't think this is the usual fake-out move. For years and years and years, we've been looking at gold, and every time it reached the point where you might start feeling encouraged, that was the top. And just when you, when gold fell to some point where you were feeling despair, that's where it turned again. But net-net, it really wasn't going anywhere. But I think it's finally broken out, and I'm using a current target of 2302 for the last couple hundred bucks, and we'll see what happens when it gets there. But I'm assuming 2300 will be prelude to an even bigger move. Currently, April gold's trading at 2164.
What's driving the higher gold prices?
I think I hate to say this because, you know, the geopolitical answer hasn't really been relevant for years and years and years, not since the Soviet tanks rolled into Czechoslovakia. But I think it's just a perception that the world is about to, it's been going to hell in a handbasket, but I think as we're getting closer and closer to the critical velocity there as to how quickly we're going to hell, it's stimulating some interest in gold.
Is it because it makes people more secure if the regular economy goes for a dive?
No, I think in that sense, you know, people are going to want to, gold will work as money. It's going to be a source of liquidity, and of course, that'll probably slow gold's ascent. And I guess if you're hoarding gold, burying doubloons in your backyard, it's partly for that rainy day, or worse. And so I guess people who hoard gold, we don't really want to think about that, how things are going to, when that gold, when the doubloons in the backyard start getting dug up to buy food. But that's what it may come to.
Should you insist that you physically hold the gold, that a paper certificate isn't worth the printing on it?
Well, there's a problem there. You know, nobody who seriously hoards gold can be unmindful of what happened under Roosevelt when he essentially confiscated gold at a below the market price, well under the market price. And then after gold had been essentially, and this was ostensibly so that the government could have a source of liquidity and assets to restore the banking system to something like health. You know, we had a banking collapse in the early 30s, and many banks folded, and those that enjoyed a federal charter managed to stay open and do a lot of repossessions and things like that. So even if you're, you know, whatever your purpose for gold, you can't be entirely trusting of how gold might be treated officially.
Because I'm thinking of Japan, where people still don't trust the banks, and they will hide money or gold around their house. They buy safes that look like something else. Could you see a market for that here, where you can hold your gold somewhere, hide it in the backyard under the floorboards? Or do you think the government would use gold-sniffing dogs to find it?
Well, you know, it's somewhat paradoxical, really, for people to be hoarding gold. It's a way of sort of looking. You assume that these people have a very negative view of the future, that things could go seriously awry. But they are, however awry they go, in people's and gold hoarders' imaginations, they're never so bad that this gold that they hoarded becomes useless or is confiscated. You know, just to have gold and think, well, we're going to have a barter economy and I'll be able to buy bread with gold, you're already hazarding a guess about what the future will look like, and it could be a lot worse than that.
Now, Roosevelt didn't confiscate jewelry. Are the rappers right to wear all their wealth around their neck with big gold chains and their names in gold?
Well, they didn't confiscate jewelry because I think in terms of how that would have played out with the voters or the public, it would have been a step too far. But it was also, I guess, not a significant enough store of gold for the government to even bother. You know, the idea that people are going to turn in their gold implies that it's going to be melted. And that, you know, there are certain things that even in the worst of times are never going to fly.
Well, I can imagine the outrage when they said, "We're coming for your wedding rings."
Yeah, there would have been outrage, less outrage, I think, than if they say, "We're coming for your guns" or something like that. But just the same, you have to have an imagination of the future that I think is, well, it's difficult. You know, even I write about these things, but I don't push the envelope as to what I really, really think could happen. You know, I do. We've talked about the possibility, or I'd say the likelihood, of a barter economy somewhere down the road, but that implies that things are going to be really hard times, such as we've never had, even during the 1930s, will be with us.
Is silver going to enjoy this golden era?
Well, it doesn't seem to be enjoying it quite as much as a lot of silver bulls would hope. You know, gold has made a nice move. Silver has somewhat lagged, and the gold-silver ratio is going kind of out of whack. But I think silver will eventually catch up in very hard times because it represents silver will be probably more useful as money because it's divisible in smaller amounts than gold. It's easy. You just get yourself a bag of Roosevelt dimes pre-1964 or whatever, and that will be pretty good barter money.
And of course, one of the reasons why people wonder why silver isn't higher, it's an industrial metal. These huge solar farms are using incredible amounts of silver. Why isn't the price higher?
Good question, you know, and I know there's I've heard that same question coming from different angles. You know, a friend of mine has been buying 1,000-ounce bars of silver since forever at mostly much lower prices, and he would regularly get delivery. He doesn't, this isn't paper transaction. He wants to be holding the actual ingots. So he's been buying them, and he got a notice from his supplier, "Look, you know, usually we can get this stuff shipped out to you in a few days, but in this case, it's going to take a few weeks." So there was, we've had over the last few years some real, a very obvious shortage of physical silver, and yet, you know, the price has been suppressed in ways that are difficult to comprehend. It's like the demand for physical is there, but somehow the usual dirt balls usually overwhelm physical supply with paper supply. But we're getting to the point where the people who doing the overwhelming are becoming evidently more interested in owning physical themselves, and And so we're going to get effectively redemptions of ETFs, a lot of claims on physical silver. And we already know that there's not enough physical silver to redeem all those claims. So that would seem to be very bullish for silver.
What would happen if, say, a quarter to half of silver certificate holders demanded the real deal?
Well, I think the regulators would step in to protect the sleazeballs. You know, the in the past, you've had forecasts like gold was going to $5,000 an ounce, and that's just where the funnel began. It'll eventually go to $50,000. And I think the only way you could even make a case for that being possible is by saying that all of the paper claims on gold will be exercised. You know, the futures contracts, everybody holding a futures contract will take delivery on gold and this and that. And in the end, though, you have to ask yourself, well, when it comes down to enforcing the rules, will the regulators favor the little guy, or in the case of gold, the bullion bankers? And that's not a very difficult question to answer. It's not like, you know, Bunky Hunt found that out years ago, and he tried to corner silver, and the regulators changed the rules so that he and Eastman Kodak were the only players in the game. So I don't really believe these ridiculous numbers for gold and silver, $50,000 an ounce for, it ain't happening. And I've told my subscribers that even if gold spikes because of a shortage of physical arising from paper claims, that they better find themselves one dumb farmer so that they can exchange their Krugerrands or maple leaves for something of real value, namely farmland. So anyway, as I was suggesting earlier, it's really impossible to imagine what could happen when the financial system begins to implode, which it will.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, are the stock markets showing that they're about to top out?
I think so. I know. I've been saying that for 30 years, but you have some interesting things going on. You know, the absolute crap is floating to the top of the toilet bowl. You know, we've got stocks like Beyond Meat and Carvana, which they should be both down in the low teens or lower, and they've had amazing short squeezes, and that's what's happening. I mean, all the big stocks, what they call the Magnificent Seven, but which I refer to as the lunatic sector, they've been short squeezed like crazy, creating zillions of dollars of quote unquote wealth in this world, but they've kind of had their move. So now the focus is on some of these has been institutional favorites, such as Carvana and Beyond Meat. So when the dregs float to the top like they're doing, you know we're close to the end game.
Bitcoin mania, it's topped its record high. What's your take on it?
Bitcoin is a hoax, but it's been very well managed, you know, and I got to give the sleazeballs who do the managing credit for hanging on to it when it fell from 70,000 down into the low teens, that all they had to do was hang on and it would eventually come back. And of course, they had a little help from the regulators there with the creation of a Bitcoin ETF, which not just in theory, but in practice gave everybody the ability to be a Bitcoin player without going through the difficulties of using a Bitcoin wallet and some of the other ways that people do their Bitcoin changing. So that's what Bitcoin needed. It just needed an ETF to insinuate it all these opportunities on a proletarian mine, and it's caused an absolute, it's caused Bitcoin to go bonkers. And you talk about something being driven by a demand for paper Bitcoin, and the irony being that even the real thing, so to speak, Bitcoin, is it's not even paper. It's it's virtual. And I always like to make the point that nobody in this world, none of the biggest players, none of the experts, none of the bankers, nobody at the Federal Reserve has ever provided any reason at all to believe that the Bitcoin is worth anything at all. It's just not. There's nothing there. And the argument that's made most frequently is that it's scarce, but scarcity is not money. And so, yeah, Bitcoin is a great hoax. And for people to be thinking that it will be a store of value in really hard times, it may be, but it's not going to be storing value at $70,000 per copy. You know, Bitcoin might be down there. Well, I think it's probably worth maybe a buck and a half or $2, not $70,000, simply because it is a useful medium to affect a secure financial transaction. Bitcoin can do that, so it does have value, it has use, but it's in that respect, it has to be, you know, its usefulness has to be compared to that of actual money or credit cards, and Bitcoin hasn't done too well there. People don't use Bitcoin to buy stuff. They use it to speculate.
And, of course, we're one Carrington event of having every Bitcoin wiped off the planet. And I'm talking about the huge solar flare that hit the Earth back in 1859. And back then we had telegraphs, and they all melted down. Well, now everything's electronic. So your Bitcoin, you know, stored in a computer, that could disappear. One solar flare.
Well, if solar flare is significant enough to cause Bitcoin to disappear, that will be the least of our problems, you know. Anything that's not, I guess, shielded from electromagnetic pulse or is going to disappear. I mean, we'll be back in, might as well be the year 700 AD here if we get that kind of cosmic conflagration.
Well, apparently a giant solar flare just missed the Earth a couple of weeks ago. Now, maybe if you have good surge protection, your household might be protected, but what about the power grid?
Yeah, we don't have that. I was just at the Mines and Money show last week, and I bumped into an old friend of mine, David Tice, who used to run the Prudent Bear Fund. But he's now out promoting a documentary film that he made with, I think it's Dennis Quaid as narrator, about the vulnerability of our power grid. And I'm not sure exactly what the link is, but if you just Google David Tice Power Grid, you can find a copy of this excellent film.
Well, get a hamster to run on a wheel and generate your own power, I guess.
Have you ever tried to, like, you know, they have those flashlights. I think they're probably made in Moscow, but it's an emergency flashlight that you have to hand crank. And when you discover how much cranking you have to do just to make a bulb give off enough light that maybe you could find something in a closet. It takes a lot of work to generate power.
Yeah, I know. I have an emergency radio. Same thing. It's good for about 10 minutes after you crank it.
Right, right. I think it can't hurt. I mean, that's a useful item to have around the house is just a solar-powered battery charger. In fact, I keep meaning to get one, but anyways, anybody who's hand-cranked a flashlight knows Gotta be a better way.
Well, a 15-year-old girl in Vancouver invented a flashlight that runs off the heat of your hand, and you can buy it on Amazon.
Yeah, but in order to generate enough heat, you have to keep running 440 sprints.
Yeah, and you got to have food to make sure that you're warm. What's going to go on with the crude oil market? In Canada, of course, they keep adding carbon tax after carbon tax. So even when the global price of oil goes down, we have to pay more.
Don't you hate that? You really do. I mean, when gas prices are falling, just leave it to the state of Connecticut or whoever to add a 10 cent per gallon tax. Crude, it's definitely had a certain firmness. The price has been firm. It's really been tradable just on $6, $7, $8 swings. But it points higher. But you know, there's always the black swan out there, some geopolitical outlier that could just in a blink completely upend supply and demand and crude. So I'm not even sure I want to make a forecast there, but it does look like it wants to move above 80 and kind of hang out there. But of course, it will have a lot of trouble staying up there, absent demand from, well, at the margin, Chinese manufacturers. So crude's a tough call. And I just look at it as something on a chart, that you trade.
Anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
Well, the big mover really is gold. It's doing something interesting. And when we get the dollar in gear, I've always felt that in the end, a strong dollar wasn't going to work against strong gold. The two of them were going to wind up being companionable. But that could happen only under the most dire assumptions, really. It's such an anomaly, the idea of crude and the dollar simultaneously being in bull markets. And the dollar piece of it is really very counterintuitive because our government is certainly not doing anything Powell has raised interest rates, putting the squeeze on dollar debtors, and that's really been a source of strength for the dollar. And I think that trend will continue. So when we see gold and the dollar simultaneously in strong rallies, you'll know we've had a very significant tone change with the way planet Earth's banking system operates. It's I'm not going to say that will be it will be the fat lady singing. So that's really what you should keep your eye on.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
And thank you, Jim. It's always a pleasure, really.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.